Hello, everybody. It's that time again. It's time for another podcast. And this podcast is going to be about Indiana Jones. And, well, we're pretty excited to do a podcast. We're a little tardy this time, but I think we're going to make up for it by having the podcast be extra special this time. We've lost a Milstein, but we've gained another Werkheiser. Not Heather this time, but in fact, Kevin's older brother, Ian. Say hello. So that is the voice that will be corresponding with Ian Werkheiser throughout the rest of the podcast. My name is Sean Sterling, and with me, as always, is Kevin.
Yes.
And Chris.
Yo.
And the other Sean, Sean Hurlburt.
Ladies and gentlemen, how was everybody's Memorial Day?
Mine was kind of dismal.
I
only got 5 hours of sleep, and I've kind of had like a slight headache all day, and I'm just really tired.
All right.
I wasn't so bad. I had to work too, but my job.
It wasn't that memorial.
Wow.
Still, support the troops.
Well, I guess we should probably just start with Hurlburt.
All right. I'll preface this with simply. I'll get a hold of it for that. I mean, just my favorite Indiana Jones movie is the second one. Okay. And I know that's because I know Kevin and I had a few discussions about that. But that once I guess I said that at this point, it's pretty clear. I love this movie. There I go. There, go, Chris.
Oh, okay. I didn't really like it too much. I mean, I think that it's, I think that interestingly enough, the action is better with him older, because it relies less on him sort of grappling and doing kind of acrobatic stuff that was uninteresting to me, and more just sort of an old guy sort of standing in and like punching people, which I guess is more interesting to me. But
that's your love of Rocky Balboa or Rocky.
Yeah. I mean, I should also preface by saying my favorite Indiana Jones movie is The Last Crusade.
Also, and note, this is not based on having seen all the Indiana Jones.
That's true.
I like it more than Temple of Doom.
Yeah. and Crystal Skull.
And Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
But the main reason I like that one so much is that the Nazi woman in that one is like the hottest woman on Earth, in my opinion.
What's her name? Allison Duty?
Yeah, the actress' name is Allison Duty, which is the least sexy name in history.
Her character's name is Elsa Schneider. So
yeah, Elsa Schneider.
We spent enough time on you.
Kevin, how'd you feel?
I thought it was awesome. I really loved it. There were times while watching it, I was like, is this my second favorite Indiana Jones movie? That's pretty impressive to do that after so long. And it's not, but only barely is it not. And it might climb a little bit. I don't know. I have to give it more time. But it...
I like it every time I see it.
Have you, you've seen it twice already?
And four times.
And it, what I really liked was just how much just complete love they showed for Indiana Jones, the character, and for Marion, the character. I wish they'd been more Marion, but I mean, they clearly were just like, this is the kind of feeling that Kevin Smith wished Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back had. Where it's just like total fan service front to back. It's, look at all these people that you love, and here they are, and doing the things that you like them to do, and here, look, he's got a whip and a hat. That's great. There are problems, but they're pretty negligible.
Mm-hmm. Ian?
I should post-fist what Kevin said by telling you that he was Indiana Jones 4 Halloweens running. Yeah. He had a whip and a hat and a gun and a jacket up on his wall.
A real gun?
Yes. He has read almost all of the comic books that came out in the short-lived Marvel spin-off comic series. He has seen every Young Indiana Jones episode, even the one with the little kid with the blonde hair that nobody likes. So before you go listening to what he said, you should weigh that.
Well, I think that's perfectly reasonable, because there is... There's a huge, it's, well, I guess with anything like this, there is a backlash coming from people who were weaned on Indiana Jones and raised on him. And just, I you know, so yeah, it's nice, I'm glad to, you know, hear somebody like, because I know I came to Indiana, I was a big fan of him as when I was young and stuff, and I remember, like, playing and being Indiana Jones, but my appreciation for Indiana Jones didn't come until I was, I remember specifically when I, there's a story actually for it, I've told Sean the story before, because my stepmom recorded, when my dad first met her, before they got married, she recorded movies, but when she recorded movies, she didn't record the credits of movies. So movies were missing like the first 5 minutes of all the movies. So when I watched Temple of Doom, I always watched it from where the guy comes out and tells Indy, "Be careful, watch your back, Indy." And so I did not know there was anything else. So then my dad bought the because we got into like this Indiana Jones phase and we watched Raiders of the Lost Ark. He said, "Oh wow, Raiders of the Lost Ark is still really great. I love it." So then we went out and he bought Temple of Doom for me on VHS and I watched it. And there's a 5-minute segment in there that I did not know existed, and it kind of blew my mind that that was there. And that's what kind of sparked my love for Indiana Jones from that moment.
Did they record credits? Acknowledging people?
Apparently Carrie didn't, you know, thought the credits were boring, was her explanation. So
when there's movie happening.
Yeah.
That's why it was just, like, boggled my, because, like, in the context, that first 5 minutes, like, kind of just completely sets up what that what you're about to get
it's
with this movie.
It's challenging beginning to begin with that line.
Watch your back, Indy. That sets up what you're going to see as well, really.
You don't get enough movies where the opening line is an auxiliary character warning your hero to watch his back.
Exactly. That you never see again. So Indiana Jones is the reason Kevin wanted to be an archaeologist for the first large period of his life. But I liked it. The first Indiana Jones movie is a truly great film. I mean, it is a great movie. It hits every note that a movie should do. The character is complicated and excellent. The second movie is a terrible movie. It's a bad remake of a 1930s racist black and white film called Gunga Din. I recommend you check it out. It was hampered by the fact that Steven Spielberg wanted to bone the lead actress whom they later married. It's a terrible movie. The third movie is a lot of fun, but it's not great. But it's a lot of fun. I really, really, every time I watch it, I'm happy. And I think that this movie, like you were saying, is right at that level. It is fun. I liked it. I had a good time. I would definitely watch it again. I'd buy the DVD. But it's not a great movie. It's not like the first one.
Right, yeah.
But when I heard that Indiana Jones they were going to make a fourth one, I was not happy. I thought it was going to be terrible. And then when they said there was going to be a young guy in it, I was even more sure it was going to be really, really bad. You know, it's time to pass the torch. You're old and stupid. And, he would essentially be Sean Connery's character from the third one. So the fact that he still had something going and he kept pushing through the pain and the old and the whatever, I thought that was great. So I enjoyed it.
That'd have been an interesting meeting, Spielberg telling Harrison Ford, "Yeah, you're too old, so this movie's going to make fun of you for 2 hours, and Shia's going to be really cool." Okay. Okay, Spielberg, I'll do it for you.
I liked it. It's a good movie. I have problems with it, though. I had more reservations than I thought I was going to have, and it took me a while to start having fun. It is an enjoyable movie. It is a fun movie, and it does have some really, really cool action scenes in it. I think it's probably my least favorite. I think I know why Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is probably my least favorite. I feel like, because they're all sort of unbelievable movies, because they are action movies, and most action movies are inherently unbelievable, but they're also adventure movies, and those are always often romanticized as well. But this sort of feels like it takes it a little bit farther than the other ones have, and that it does, with the inclusion of the aliens.
So God will melt the face of Nazis, but aliens are melting.
Also with there are scenes like when Shia LaBeouf like gets up in the trees with the monkeys and he's inspired, like, "Hey, maybe I could." And then he starts swinging along.
Yeah,
he's the king of the monkeys. Yeah. You love monkeys.
Yeah, that was one of the low points for me.
I like that scene a lot. The part of the scene, because the way it starts, I mean, it says so much about his character. Because I like the idea. Because I mean, the way I see these movies, he's Indy's son, but he's like with that moment where he like starts swinging on the trees, he like buys into the idea of what the grandeur of Indiana Jones is and what something larger than life and being a part of like that myth and just like swing around. The part where it does start to get bad though is when the monkeys when he does come in and the monkeys attack start attacking the Russians, and it's just like, wait, that's a little too much.
There are things like that that sort of betray I feel like the previous three films logic. Yeah. I feel like something like that wouldn't have happened in Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
So and to answer your comment, Ian, I feel like magic has always been a part of the whole Indiana Jones concept since the beginning of the first movie, all throughout it. And then to get into the fourth movie, and oh, by the way, there's aliens as well, I feel like it's hard to digest.
To me, my problem with the fourth one is that there were a lot of great set pieces. There were a lot of action, like, wow, that's cool, and wow, that's cool. But it ultimately, especially the second time I watched it, felt like a lot of really cool stuff that happened. There you go, go home. It wasn't a cohesive story. It's like they started a bunch of really good through lines and then didn't remember to finish them at the end. Like, in the beginning, there's a giant nuclear blast. You see the terror of this mushroom cloud. It's incredibly impressive. He sees the smallness of him. Then later, the girl talks about how, you know, Americans have the bomb, but now this will be our bomb. This will be the thing. That's, you know, you're creating a theme. And then nothing happens. The end. Some aliens. Go home.
A theme that I thought was going to be more present was him being older. Which,
yeah, that would have been good
which
too.
Wasn't present. That was one of the things that upset me, is that I thought that they were going to actually, I foolishly thought that they were actually going to address how old he was, and they totally did not. They totally did not. They just completely ignored it.
That's true.
They completely ignored how fucking old he was. He did basically the same shit he's always done in all three movies, and that's fine, I guess. That's fine. It's a good movie. But I was told in interviews going into the movie, oh yeah, well, we're not going to treat, we're going to acknowledge his age. We're not going to treat it like that. They should have just said, no, fuck it, he's Indiana Jones. I don't care if he's 65, because that is what they did. That is what they did.
All right, now it's time to hear what Fiona thinks about Indiana Jones.
I think it was a great movie. They just made it really well, and it was just really cool. They really made all the titles and where the setting was, and the whole movie was just, I liked the music, the weird music that went on with the skull, and the skull was pretty big. I must tell you, they have lived longer because that's how they know more.
What do you think was the creepiest part?
I think it's when the bugs just went into his ears and his mouth and his nose. Ugh. Why would they want to eat boogers?
I do think, though, that as far as the atomic bomb goes, and as far as the aliens go, it was sort of, the atomic bomb was setting you up for the fact that this is now the 50s. He doesn't seem like a lot older in terms of what he can do action-wise. A little bit. I think that there was more.
They throw in a couple things, right. But I mean, it's like totally, it's like even a worse offender than I feel like Rocky Balboa was, even though Rocky Balboa is like trying to be a more legitimate movie.
Anyway. You think Rocky Balboa is trying to be a more legit?
It's trying to be a more grounded movie, I feel.
I guess. I don't think so.
I feel so.
This computer simulation. Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, I was...
But the nuclear blast to me was saying, for one thing, he's old-fashioned. You know, he didn't get older, but he got more old-fashioned. He didn't change with the times. But even though things were, you know, getting way away from the style of the first few movies, the feel of the 30s is obviously very different from the feel of the 50s, and so showing him in that the 50s town was, you know, showing you just how awkward it was in the first place. And then the atomic bomb going off is like, this is beyond what he can deal with, what Indiana Jones should be able to deal with or ever has had to deal with. But he's still Indiana Jones. He can still figure out some way to get around it and get away.
Yeah, but like when he jumps in the fridge and he gets blown to like Kingdom Kong and he still survives. I mean, it's like,
I didn't think
it feels like such a like. It feels like something I haven't had. It feels like it's something that it's asking me to believe in that it hasn't done before. And it feels like a bigger stretch than any of the stuff that happened in the film. Mm-hmm. All the three films before that, you know, you might disagree with me on Temple of Doom. They feel much more connected than I feel like this fourth film does.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, but I feel like mostly it was intentional and mostly it was trying to say, you know, here's this in the 50s. The things that were popular in the 30s, the sort of mystical elements, are what were cool in the first movies, and now that sort of thing wasn't cool in the 50s. What was cool is sci-fi.
Right. I like the paranoia and 50s paranoia.
Yeah, I understand that. There's sort of representation of that period, but I just feel like our moments that sort of betray the Indiana Jones essence to me. I'm not even like the biggest fan, but as a casual fan, as I've always been.
Going to the atomic bomb, I'm glad you saw. I want to go one step further, and I want to just say, I can easily be accused of like I see too much in movies, but I feel with Spielberg that it is justified because I know he does. Like I said, he doesn't put things in there just for any reason. And for the atomic bomb, I mean, there's
so the prairie dogs.
Yeah, well, I can explain
too many damn prairie dogs.
That scene where like the guy, the groundskeeper, couldn't kill the prairie dog, and he came up and started dancing. That was so awesome.
The film does recognize the fact that it is the 50s, but even more so, it just recognizes the fact that of moving into the future is just the big imagery. And there's a lot of imagery as far as kind of basically. I mean, just from the get-go, I mean, the reason a mountain fades into a molehill is he does that for, I mean, it's a specific reason he does it, and there's a specific reason that Spielberg intended for a car to run it over. So when he ends up in, like, this 50s town, which is basically a freakish design for, like, you know, of this, like, future that he's been put into, he's so completely out of place. And then the atomic bomb comes up. It annihilates everything. It just destroys kind of this American dream and everything, and has to realize the fact of what... the idea of what man is capable of and what they've done. And it's such a powerful statement, I believe, on Spielberg's part. It's not possible for somebody to survive an atomic blast. But the image that is so powerful to me is that, yes, the atomic bomb can destroy everything. It obliterated this town. It destroys all of our dreams. But it can't kill Indiana Jones. He says it for a specific reason. Because, and then when he comes up out of the ashes and looks up the atomic bomb... the way the shot is specifically framed, the atomic bomb is overpowering him. So, I mean, it's at the same time, Spielberg does recognize the fact that who is Indiana Jones to kind of stand up to something this big? It looms over him. But the movies, I see this movie as basically Spielberg trying to say, is the qualities that Indiana Jones stand for, is that something that is, you know, palpable for today's age? Is this type of hero... something that, you know, is necessary. Mm-hmm. And then the movie spends the rest of the time answering that question. It says, yes, heroism, courage, standing for what's right, knowledge are timeless, and they're very important. They should be exalted and not tarnished. And, I feel the atomic bomb storyline is carried throughout because it deals with the idea of... it deals with the two different gravities as far as, like, what people are capable of, and just the atomic bomb as far as being just an absolute representation of destruction. And then there's a specific shot at the end that specifically mirrors the shot of Indiana Jones looking up at the atomic bomb. It's him looking at the flying saucer. Especially to Spielberg, aliens representing the idea of wonder and enlightenment and just, you know, that childlike, you know, just imagination. And to see, you know, Indiana Jones be witness to this is just like, it's just a wonderful parallel as far as just what, you know, people are capable of.
But we're nothing compared to interdimensional beings.
Well, that's, I mean, the inter... I mean, he's... I believe that he's... because it's interdimensional beings, and then there's a specific line that I know is... can easily be written off, but, I mean, if you want to look into it, it's the line that John Hurt says that, you know, did they go into outer spaces? No, they went into the space in between spaces. And since they're interdimensional beings, you know, it might be a bit of a jump, but I think Spielberg, you know, specifically places it for a reason as far as, you know, something that doesn't go into outer space, but that's within... you know, I feel that he's saying a message as far as just... because, I mean, the aliens represent this idea of complete wonderment and just, you know, this huge accomplishment of just, like, the things that, you know, mankind could probably reach for. The idea of, you know, something like that. And then if they disappear into the space between spaces that are just in... that occupy everything, just, you know, there's a real wonder that can be... he's saying that can be obtained, and it is there for me.
Chris, yeah. I assume you agree with everything that I did like his potential last words to the Russians were "I like Ike." That was on the bomb. So it was like, "Yeah, 50s Americana," and then it's like, "Ugh, 50s Americana."
Yeah, that is a good touch.
I've heard it said by Sean Hurlburt here that this movie, it was described to me as, man, it's really weird. I feel like it's very weird in terms of its tone and its message, but I was kind of disappointed by the ending because I felt like in terms of structure, it's exactly the same as Last Crusade. It's by the they journey and journey, and then there's sort of a mad dash to this location they need to get to. Like, greed consumes the femme fatale female character and gets her killed, right. And then Indy and friends escape.
Seen Raiders, though, sort of.
I haven't seen Raiders.
Nevertheless, that's the standard. But,
well, yeah, that's for anything you say. Also, right. Well, Raiders explains whatever your problem is. If you had only seen that.
Yeah, right. There's a pastel scene in that one.
Chris Bradley being like, what's that thing in that box?
Yeah, I've seen the clip of the Nazi's face melting, like, 50 times on different famous movie moments.
I was kind of hoping that that's how she would die. They would just cut. They would use that exact special effect shot of her of the actual wax melting. You know, no improvement, no digitization. Just, you know.
But it's not even Cate Blanchett. It's just Toad's face getting melted off.
If I may make a couple of sort of. I'm so tired right now.
Well, we got a lot more Indiana Jones to talk about, so get up to speed.
Well, I'll do the one I wanted to save for last, actually, is Cate Blanchett has a really nice ass.
Yeah, I noticed that. She's got a big butt.
Yeah, it's really...
There's no way.
It's very,
to deny it.
It's very attractive. Very fetching.
From all those babies she's been popping out.
Nice. And the Shia LaBeouf thing... I went into the movie very skeptical because, in addition to the fact that I don't like it when young guns sort of impinge on old glorious heroes, I really don't like Shia LaBeouf, which places me in a rare, because it seems like everybody, some people at this table included, find him like really charismatic and likable, and he kind of annoys me, and that held true. But I'm willing to concede that he probably did as good a job with that character the way it was written as he could have, but I did not enjoy it. The movie would have gone from my rating of, it was, to a definitive bad if he had put the hat on in the last shot. That was how it had ended. I would have walked away from that movie pissed off.
I
was very surprised at just how much I had... How much of my opinion rode on that one moment.
I really like that moment. That was a really cool moment. That
huge.
About the villain, though, I feel like I really should have liked her more than I did. I felt like I feel like she should have been really, really cool. And she was kind of cool. She had some really cool... She had some cool moments, but...
The movie was the indie show, and it was like guest starring Cate Blanchett as the girl that's chasing after Indy.
It's just the thing is, like, she's such a good actress, and she does give a really, really good performance. It's just like, I feel like... They just didn't have her do as much stuff as she could have done once they had her.
The villains were just very not threatening. I mean, the most...
There was not a crushing weight. I mean, maybe it's because I sympathize with the USSR more than I do with Nazis, but... there just wasn't this crushing weight of evil that you felt in all three movies. Right. You know, the first movie, Indiana Jones is not a good guy. He's very flawed, but he is not evil, and everyone else there is pretty evil.
Right.
And in the second movie... He's greedy, and the other people are dark-skinned. And in the third movie, there's, again, supreme bad, evil. And in the fourth one, just everybody kind of wants the Crystal Skull, and that'd be cool.
Right.
And if they had it, I guess that'd be bad. You know, why don't we turn
Well, I mean, they're pretty bad guys. Yeah. I mean, they're pretty bad guys. Cate Blanchett wants to, like, think everyone's thoughts
that
for them.
That would be bad, but it just somehow the movie didn't communicate as an actual...
I feel like there weren't as many cool supplementary henchmen. Just the thing with Raiders, what makes that such a great film is because like memorable characters just come out of nowhere. They absolutely just show up. Like the big guy who sees Indiana Jones, it's the first time you see him, and he just sort of starts walking out, and then they're in a fight. Yeah, it's a really cool fight, and he's got a really, really cool look.
Yeah.
And
my brother...
And then like with the guy with the sword earlier on in the film, and
as far as the big guy in Raiders, I had a figure.
He's great. I really like him a lot.
I have an action figure of that Russian guy. You know what I mean? that big guy just takes off his hat and starts beating on
him. That character had that toy of yours had a hat that you could take
right,
off.
Right, yeah. Just to show you.
I agree with you very much. He has, I mean, the thing with all of the Indiana films, pretty much all of their evil is, I mean, there's the cool like sort of villains, but a lot of their evil is just predetermined on the fact like they're evil because they're Nazis, they're evil because they're a ghoulish cult, or they're evil evil because they're communists. It's pretty much it all comes down to. And there's like that one character that, I mean, that has the presence that actually is kind of like a duality with Indiana Jones. I think, you know, as far, especially with the, when that big guy comes out and tries to, you know, in the first movie and fights him, he does have a bigger presence than this Russian very much. But I mean, that's just a presence. It's hard to duplicate something just as perfect as that. But I still feel that this Russian does have a presence. And Kate Blanchett, I feel, has a great presence, just the way that her character is molded and stuff like that. And just, I love, because there's only really two big scenes. Two big scenes between her and Indiana Jones. I like their back and forth between each other, and just I feel just there's a very strong presence. But it also comes down to the fact that yes, the screenplay is lacking in some regards. But then again, I give David Koepp the fact that he had to basically Frankenstein 30 different scripts together to make people
right.
happy.
Yeah.
And so that's, Sean Connery refused to be in any
yeah.
movie. So
yeah.
any good ideas you had about that?
But then
out the window.
Yeah, but then that's when I guess just Spielberg's genius comes through for me, just because. He takes basically just these simple ideas from a script, because I mean, there's a lot of just like simple one lines in there that are just puts meaning into them through his visuals and stuff. And that's just, this very much is probably just the most visual of the Indiana Jones films that's able to tell more of a story behind just the image he's putting up there. And this, that's all Spielberg. And I
something that I liked a lot about the screenplay was, and about the story in general, was how you get the feeling at the beginning that Indiana Jones is sort of tired of all the adventuring and ready to be a dad, and it's sort of like an expression that's even older than the Mask of Zorro, which is, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher shall appear. When the dad is ready, the son shall appear.
He very much does take on kind of the mantle of wise old sage in a little right. bit, because he's like talking to us, the way he talks right. to his son and gives advice, and just because his son pretty much kind of represents this the Indiana Jones character that was present in the other three movies, and like as far as his hot-headedness and stuff,
yeah,
and then
sure.
Indiana, especially in the first scene where they're talking in the diner, and like he's getting like agitated, Indiana Jones is like perfectly calm. He's like telling him, this, you know, settle down, kid. You don't have to get mad just
right.
because of like this. And it's just, I very much like this, the role that they've allowed him to settle in, because it seems like that in that 20 years he's become a lot more comfortable with who he is.
Right, and I really like how much he is still Indiana Jones, but also is taking on aspects of his father as he gets older. And they gave him like tons of his dad's lines
yeah.
from that mm-hmm. really made me happy, because
yeah.
it just felt just exactly right when that was happening.
He's like, I've got a plan. He says, this is intolerable.
Right, yeah.
There are a lot of good references like that. That was nice.
And they're on the motorcycle, and you know, the son does something that he thinks is awesome, and the dad
yeah,
is
then I noticed that.
It's
and
exactly
then,
the same, except
and then,
you know,
he's laughing at it, and then Indiana Jones is giving that exact same look on the motorcycle in
yeah.
the Last Crusade.
I mean, so all that I really, really liked. I definitely liked the lack of respect that Shia LaBeouf was shown just throughout the whole movie. It
yeah,
was just
yeah.
really, really delightful. That whole him was good, even though I haven't really seen him in a lot. One thing that really stood out more the first time somehow was all the sort of the Brotherhood of the Cruciform Sword but Mayan guys that were around.
What was their point?
I don't know. Why were they in the graveyard?
Yeah.
They were just there.
Why did they like fighting people?
And they're like,
oh, I completely forgot about them.
Yeah.
And they all sort of moved like spiders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, because that was like one of my one of the disappointments right there. Yeah, just especially because, I mean, because there's a line for it that, you know, the city's guarded by the living dead.
Yeah,
so this is the living dead, and then like basically, like, ah, here
yeah.
we are. Oh, here's a skull. See you guys later.
Yeah.
And then they just get shot a scene later, and they're all dead.
Yeah. Yeah. They're only the ones in the graveyard, too. There's
a one or two line fix of saying that these are the descendants of the tribe that built this thing,
right.
and they dedicated their lives to defending it, or something like that. Would have been nice. Instead, it just seemed like, be careful when you go to Brazil.
Because
you never know what you're going to find.
Yeah.
That country's crazy.
I actually read an article the day the movie premiered, that apparently the Peruvian Tourism Board was concerned that that the movie might hurt their economy.
They issued a press release. There are no native ninjas lurking
in our graveyards.
Because I hear a complaint is as far as like, well, you know, because with Raiders of the Lost Ark, he saw, you know, the power of God, essentially. So then, like, a complaint with, like, with a Temple of Doom is like, what,
he, that, yeah.
why can't he believe in powerful stones or with the Holy Grail? Why doesn't he believe in the Holy Grail? But what's really fun about Indiana Jones, because there's a few lines, especially in the third one that drops, and that is just very, very important to the entire trilogy, is to not take myths at face value, as he tell, is what he's telling the class. And what's so cool about Indiana Jones is he just doesn't like, oh, well, you know, that's, you know, since I had this, he seeks out knowledge and just puts it all in to find out, and that and even says the idea of archaeology is the search for fact, not for truth. And, like, he's the one who puts the truth into it. All these movies, and just, I feel there's a really grand story, just mythic storytelling of just, you know, a man from just here to just the twilight of his years, just this grand epic thing that Spielberg has put there. That's how powerful knowledge is, and to procure it, and just the idea of that and the idea of belief, but actually, you know, going out and not just believing everything at face value, to seek out the truth is what it is.
That is a cool observation, actually, that he, throughout his years, has remained skeptical until, like, it all the magic or all the aliens, like, absolutely in his face. Because, I mean, like, if you go through, like, one crazy experience,
you might be turned crazy.
But, like, you know, what are you going to believe? Everything that people tell you? I mean, it's like, it is cool. It's cool that he, as a character, has completely, like, not believed all these crazy stories that he gets wound up to. And it's happened 4 times, at least.
Yeah. What does he learn from just stealing shit from graves and selling it? He's not doing archaeology. He's not, like, taking notes and finding out all about it. Right, exactly. He is just doing it. I mean, he's doing it, I don't think, just for purely selfish motives, but it's largely selfish.
Well, I mean, it's selfish motives, and you're right about knowledge. He wants to know. Yeah.
Right.
He doesn't care about doing a scientific study or recording it or showing it to other people.
Right.
He wants to know stuff, and when he knows stuff, he's really, really happy. And that look on his face when he's going to... Like, when he started reading the pictograms and figuring out on the map how to escape. He wasn't trying to escape anymore. His son had to try to get them out. He's now looking at the map and trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
Because he's all about personal acquisition of knowledge, but personal acquisition.
Yeah, but I mean, that's really cool because, like, there's at times where very much Indiana Jones gets, like, a hard-on when he's like, oh, really, what's this? And, like, he gets really carried away into it. But, I mean, like you said, I mean, just, like, the in-between adventures where he, like, goes out and gets stuff, but, I mean, the movie doesn't, like, I guess, he's not showing you that. He's showing you, like, this idea of, like, the story that he wants to tell. But, you know, he's alluding to the fact of just that fun idea of, like, somebody, you know, a pirate who just kind of goes out and,
you know,
wheels and deals his way into stuff like that.
But he opts for, like...
He has a higher calling, is what I'm saying. He bears witness to all this history. And Jones Chronicles, even more so. he's a witness to history, and this I really like that they've just allowed him to this reciprocal for all this knowledge he pulls in, but just how he chooses to, like, use it, and, like, you know, and just that fits into that idea of how much of a legend he's become. He's become large, especially with this film. I feel this is that just really solidifies this, how he's so much larger than life. And I'm going back to the end, I like it so much because when he pulls the hat back from Shia, it's just like basically saying, sorry, kid, there's only one Indiana Jones. And it's kind of a sad statement because it's just, there is only one Indiana Jones. I mean, who can come along and take this mantle? It's like, almost feels like a challenge to, like, you know, to actually, you know, somebody to try and do this. And it's just, I really, really like that.
I'll pound that old man in the dust.
Alright, now it's time to hear what Fiona thinks about Indiana Jones. So who did you like better? Did you like Mutt or did you like Indy better?
I really liked both of them.
So which movie is your favorite?
Mostly I think all of them are really my favorites because all of them are so good. But I think The Crystal Skull was one of my favorites that I just saw a few days ago.
Philosophical level, I do not inherently hate somebody because they are a communist. I do inherently hate somebody if they're a Nazi.
Yes.
And therefore, if you're going to have the villains be communists, you're going with something that is inherently less evil, then I feel like the actions that those characters take on screen in the movie have to be even more evil than they were when you were trotting out Nazis.
Right,
whereas
show them to be Stalinist, you know.
Yeah, whereas the
I'm not as knowledgeable as I'd like to be on Russian genocidal history. But I think we can all agree that Stalin was a pretty bad guy,
right,
and they're pretty keen on Stalin. They seem like they like him quite a bit deal. So I feel like they're bad guys. They're definitively
right.
bad
but
guys.
That's the a little something.
That's my problem. Is I did not get enough of that. Emphasis on wanting to.
It's all in Cate Blanchett's speech, though. She wants to completely subvert thought on this side of the globe. She wants to think all of our thoughts for us. And that's a pretty evil thought, I feel like. That is sufficiently evil for me. I mean, they're not as
It was insufficiently evil. Yeah. Versus, if we get the Ark, Hitler will win World War II. That's high fucking stakes, you know?
But it's hard to get as strong a visceral aversion than it is to the Nazis.
I think it's even done in the script. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm not saying Steven Spielberg didn't do a good job. Certainly, Cate Blanchett was excellent. But I agree with you. Just giving some lines, giving some actions where they're just clearly worse. They could have been happier about killing the Indians or calling that, you know, the Mayan ninjas, you know, something like that, you know, something to sort of up the stakes and make them more seriously evil. I do agree.
Yeah, I feel like some corners were cut in corners were sanded off in order to make it more sort of family fun. Like the scene where they do kill the guards at the beginning was just like, wow, that's awesome. It wasn't like, oh my god, what just happened? It was just like, oh cool, that was pretty clever.
They weren't expecting that.
Yeah, exactly. And then the natives of Peru being killed off screen, it was like, oh okay, that's a shame. You know, if they had shown that would have been like, oh man, they gotta stop these guys. Yeah, at least stop
I Spielberg like that the crystal skull repels natives and ants.
Yeah. To a certain extent, I did kind of like that he wasn't that at the end of the movie he wasn't like, oh no, Cate Blanchett. He sort of wasn't worried that Cate Blanchett was gonna get the power.
Yeah,
I think that's the problem is because he's like, no, that never works. You know, she's just gonna melt or something. She's gonna go after it and she'll fall down a pit or something. You know, if she grabs it, then I'll start chanting some shit and it'll light her on fire. You know, he wasn't concerned about that. So then when she's like, I'm gonna get this power, he's like, all right, I'll see ya. You know, have fun with that power that you're getting.
The other thing is, once he looked into the crystal skull's eyes, I sort of don't know why they were fighting.
Right.
Because
neither did he though.
Right. Everyone wants to take the crystal skull to the temple.
The exact same goal.
Put it on top of the skeleton.
Right.
That's what everybody wants. If we all could just sit down and talk for a second, we could all just go at the same time together.
But the skull wants him to do it.
Yeah,
because
I want to.
Because the skull doesn't want the Russians around. We do it because the Russians want different things.
Obviously, the person who puts the skull, obviously the aliens aren't beholden to whoever. Yeah. If she puts the skull, you're talking like, oh, if the Russians put the skull on, we have to do what they say. She puts the skull on and they melt her. There's clearly no.
That's true. That's a good point. But
because I mean, the big point that I
still a fun movie.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. I mean, the point that because at that point, after he has the when he sees into the skull, and I really like that scene a whole bunch just because it's as far as it's how it's communicated, and then he says return. You know, the skull's telling him to break it and bring it back to him. And when he does bring it back, it wants to give them a gift. And I believe this is why it is, because, I mean, Indiana Jones is a witness to history. And he wants... The alien is drawing... I mean, the quest to go there is not just the quest to just stop ultimate evil. I mean, that is that is at its heart kind of what it is. But at the same time, it very much is... It wants to show him what it is. It wants to show him the spaceship. And, it fits into my idea as far as... It wants to show him this amazing, amazing thing. And because, I mean... Because it does fall into that idea of like, well, then if they would just let the Russians taken it there, they would have just been destroyed. Because what's really great, because that same argument could be made about Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones, if they would have just taken that Ark to Hitler and he would have opened it would have killed everybody and everything would have been good. There was no reason for Indy to go on this adventure
and
get the Ark.
Maybe they would have opened it in front of Hitler.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He's responsible for World War II. What?
So, but I mean, what's so great about that movie is just like he goes and he witnesses it. He's in the presence of that power, and he sees and not just mere fact, but truth is what it is. And especially with the Ark, I mean, it's really great about the alien too. It's just because when the Ark's open, it's not because the Ark doesn't kill the Nazis just because they were looking. It kills them because it recognizes evil, and that's what I think. You know, that the alien why it kills Cate Blanchett. I mean, just it also, because it fits very much in the idea of the duality that, you know, Harrison Ford using knowledge to better himself, while Cate Blanchett wants ultimate knowledge to basically control people. And just, and there's specific shots, especially as far as how they're lit, where they're just, they're lit in very similar ways to, like, you know, just these two different, like, ideals kind of fighting it out. And just at the end when she, like, tries to, you know, I would like to think this, that alien recognizes itself, you know, when it's in the presence of evil, and it just obliterates it. Right. And I mean, just it's a nice notion that basically that evil will just destroy itself. And
I did
just,
like
I like that a
I did
whole lot.
Like, I did like that the fourth movie sort of implies that both all Hindu and the Judeo-Christian gods are interdimensional beings.
The true source of all the other
aliens.
He has a nice line. It says, you know, we're in there. Shia LaBeouf says, God's head like doesn't look like that. And then he says, well, depends on who your god is.
Just responding to what you said about the alien recognizing evil, obviously that's a matter of interpretation that I can't really argue with you, but when I saw it, just the way the alien sort of looked physically and the way it sort of moved its head, it felt more to me like, you know, it said, oh, it wants to give us a gift, but that I felt like he didn't recognize evil as much as he was just pissed off by the audacity of her request. It felt more like, hey, fuck you. You don't get to know everything. You know, I gotta give you a gift, not everything.
You know what
the
look was? That look was the look of, you want this power? Then take it!
And then also, I think that the reason Shia LaBeouf's in the movie is to give an excuse for Cate Blanchett to make a premature ejaculation joke.
Yes.
I thought that joke was a cliche joke, but I enjoyed having it. I enjoyed that insight into that character,
which,
I guess.
Which joke?
Yeah, so that's clearly a woman who's been let down in bed a few times.
Oh, like it. I really like that line where, like, she says, I'm sure there's a bunch of women for you. It's like, yeah, there was, but no, they all had the same problem. No, are you, honey? Which is just even, that's just, I mean, maybe, again, I'm reading too much. That's just even like a grander statement where it's just like, yeah, Indiana Jones has been away for a long time, but guess what? None of them were, there's a lot of movies that copied us, but none of us were, you know, Indiana Jones.
But also same with Marion. I mean, even the husband of Willie has said that Marion was clearly just the best, and there's no competing. And so that is sort of like, again, more just for fan service. Yeah. It's like, yeah, you know, she's the best, and, you know.
And just when they cut back to her and she has that just total girlish smile.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I really like, the complaint that I'm getting from, like, I'm reading into it a lot of the time, saying just, like, a lot of just, like, the characterization is just, like, this, they're criticizing the movie for what it wasn't and not what it was, essentially, is what it comes down to. And just, I like the fact that this Spielberg's grown up, these characters have grown up, but in some ways the audience that love these characters refuses to grow up and just wants the same thing over again.
Well, and I did like that the leading lady was the same age as the leading man, instead of not having her and having Cate Blanchett perhaps being the love interest of the whole thing. I did like that.
Yeah, and I just like how immediately after just 20, this, like, have they been apart for so long, just how quickly they just forgive each other and just how they get back into, like, who they were, because just they missed each other. Yeah. And that's just so strong, and they're just so happy to be together, and just they're having such a good time. It just clearly just translate from the screen to me. I was just so into it. And then just in the scene where then they get into that, because I really love just the that chase through the jungle and just everything that's going on. There isn't as much tension as, like, say, when it's my favorite action scene ever, is where he takes the truck with the arc and just everything that happens on it. It's just amazing. There's tension, but this one is, it's a different type of just of how much I love this, just because of just the playfulness that's going on. Because I mean, just no way can direct an action scene like Steven Spielberg, and just how he just, just his camera angles are just so precise, and just how he wants to move his camera, what he's showing you, and just how he keeps contrast with everything, and just what you're looking at. It's just. I was just witnessing just a master just doing what he does best. Yeah, I was just so impressed with what was going on in that scene.
He was not scared to be clever about the action. He was very, very delighted to go as clever as possible.
Because he hasn't been able to do that for so long.
He doesn't make, like, fun action movies. Yeah. I mean, War of the Worlds is cool, but it's not.
It's not Indiana Jones. Yeah.
You know? Tim Robbins is probably going to kill
him. I just wanted to... something very, very minor. Very minor that I disliked about the movie. Didn't like the way the aliens looked. I'm never really too satisfied with like how the major media wants me to think of like aliens. Like they all have the big heads, and they're all like have really skinny bodies.
Well,
War of the Worlds mixed it up a little because they had sort of a weird triangle Jones going on.
I was actually not bothered by the look of the alien, partly because it's supposed to be a 1950s homage. I mean,
the flying saucer,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's in Area 51. They, you know, there's references to the 1950s, and also all of that is referencing that conspiracy theory of those lines that they are aliens that came down and taught ignorant South Americans how to build things and taught ignorant Egyptians how to build things. That whole myth started in the 1950s. And the
myth. Myth.
Oh. All right, let's back up a step.
You're a brother too.
exactly. And the fact that one group of Native Americans bound their head with ropes to extend them, that is one of the arguments that was brought forward in Chariots of the God, that BS book that came out back then. So I think that it was largely referencing that. I was kind of sad afterwards. I was thinking about how that is going to give fresh credence, fresh meat to people to go read that stupid book and believe, wow, you know, hey, that's a good point, Indiana Jones is, you know, I never thought about that. They are too stupid to build pyramids.
Right, yeah.
No one could invent that shape. It had to be taught by aliens.
Anyway, my final thought on the movie was one that really only Herbert and I will understand, but in a deeper sense, maybe only a few people could understand, is that the movie, except for the beginning, which I feel was kind of weak. I mean, I liked the hot rod, and then...
Yeah, that's good.
I love the beginning of this movie so much.
I kind of was like, I was like, oh, neat, I'm on board. And then it was such an obvious, like, set, and the backgrounds looked really bad for, like, Cate Blanchett's appearance. After it sort of got underway, it was just so much just, like, designed to make me happy. It was designed to give me joy. It was, here you go, Kevin, here's your Indiana Jones movie. Be
happy. Oh, God,
And I know you referenced this already, but I'll say that this made me feel most like seeing U2 3D, where it was just like, here's some joy, eat it! And I'm like, all right, I can take it. I can take all the everything you know about joy, Steven Spielberg, and Bono.
So, who is the biggest Indiana Jones fan? Is it Kevin or is it Herbert? Herbert loves Temple of Doom. Do you love Temple of Doom,
no,
Kevin?
No. But, I mean, the beginning's good.
I mean, I'd like to...
So, doesn't that make Herbert the bigger Indiana
I'd like to sit down with you someday and, like, really, you know, talk to you about my feelings. Because, I could just literally talk a whole lot about Temple of Doom and why I love it so much and just go specifically scene by scene of just, like,
well,
what...
we can watch it and we can...
a scene analysis.
All right, now it's time to hear what Fiona... thinks about Indiana Jones. So what would you give this movie on a scale of 1 to 10?
I think I would give them 10.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why?
Because they're just really good, and I think Indiana Jones movies are just the best movies. No one else can make them. Even me. Even though I'm a smarty pants. But anyway, I just really like it.
Forgettable villains.
Yeah, we do.
Right, well, I guess we might as well just start with Herbert.
The model of consistency.
Seven
with me. Seven.
Four and a half.
When I first saw it, I couldn't take what was happening. Like what was going on. It was just like, oh, it's the new Indiana Jones movie. It's just like it kept washing over me. I never got like the full effect of what the hell was going on with that movie. But the second time, I was finally able to like sit down and like really, really enjoy it. And then when like, especially the second time when Steven Spielberg thing comes out, it's directed by Steven Spielberg. I just was like, I got goosebumps at it. It's just like this is, you know what. This is what living is all about. That's essentially what I kind of told myself. And just the more I've watched, the more I've enjoyed it. And I see a lot in it. And it reminds me just why I love Indiana Jones so much. And so, you know, and I'm going to give it a 10. And just a final note, just is because what Spielberg does so well is that family dynamic. Starting with Temple of Doom is where he started doing the family dynamic for the Indiana Jones movies, which is basically the odd family that he creates between Willie, him, and Short Round, and then later on the odd family he creates with his father, Marcus. This is Last Crusade.
Oh, sorry.
Last Crusade, and then Solidus, that odd family. And this one he finally really gets to, you know, really put that family dynamic together, and just, he really puts together in a much bigger point, because, I mean, the alien is divided into 13, it comes into one, and I believe there's a message in that, as very much as the idea as far as all these people, this family being separated due to, you know, just lies and lack of knowledge, but then just them all coming together to form kind of this one cohesive unit, and they become just so great because of it. And it's just really, I got kind of misty-eyed at parts, and it's just of how much, and just even thinking about it, I was like, when it just, especially just that image of Indy, like, you know, surviving a nuclear blast, just, I mean, just, that holds so much meaning and so much power to me. I could see why people would consider it ridiculous, but I mean, I just wish that sometimes, you know, people could see the movies the way that, you know, I see them, and just, just the power inherent to them, just because it's just, it's such a bold statement by Spielberg, and just, I know people are going to give him crap because, you know, say it's naive on his part to say something like that, but it's just, I very much just appreciate Spielberg, I'm going to start crying now, so much for being, you know, somebody who's willing to, you know, kind of go out of range with something that isn't popular like that and say something so big like that. It means a lot to me.
Oh my God. There we go. Chris. How do you feel?
Stop that.
What would you rate Indiana Jones on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'll give it a 3.5.
Why are you giving it that?
I don't mean to offend anyone. But, I think that a big draw of them is excitement, and I'm rarely excited during them.
You're rarely excited in general, though, right?
That's what you people like to tell me. I obviously don't attach as much to it as Hurlburt does. And I can imagine that it would be a very enjoyable experience if I did, but I don't. I will say that, generally speaking, what you said about his family dynamics, I generally really dislike the way he handles family dynamics, and I actually did like it in this movie, which surprised me. But I did not like it enough to
raise it above the bar.
Yeah. I'll give it a 4.5. It would have gotten a 3. That was to him, not you guys.
Ken was laughing though.
Yeah, but you were in my field of vision. It would have gotten a 3.5 if Shia LaBeouf had put the hat on. Since he didn't, it gets a 4.5. And one thing I wanted to mention, I didn't like the waterfall scene. That was just, it was too big a jump for me. Because every time, every waterfall they went off, I was just like, look at all those fucking rocks right at the bottom. And that was stretching my fantasy capacity too far.
What do you give it, Kevin?
I'm going to give it a 9. Ian disagrees with my system, and so you'll hear his little thing.
But your system's crazy.
Well, no, but his system you'll like even less, because his system is based entirely on the quality of the movie. So he can love a 1,
right,
and he can despise a 10,
right,
but he can know that 10s are really well-made movies. Like Birth of a Nation is his example. That it's, you know, it's sort of a big ad for the Ku Klux Klan, and you know, they're black people in Congress, and they're like swinging from the trees, you know, or swinging from the chandeliers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's a terrible, mean, evil movie, but it invented shooting with multiple cameras, right, and you know, D.W. Griffith invented the close-up. I mean, it's ridiculous. So obviously, that's a really well-made movie. So for him, that's a 10, even though when he watches it, he's like, I hate this movie.
Yeah.
But for me, it is based on enjoyment, damn it, because I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about the way they made it. Maybe I'm wrong about this or that, but I know how I felt coming out of it. I felt a 9, a rush of a 9. And quickly, in terms of surviving atomic blasts, everybody's always like, oh, that's not possible. But there are right now over 100,000 survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So
yeah, but none of them have been jettisoned outside of a fridge capsule.
They survived in various ways.
Well, some of them were literally just standing behind a brick wall.
Right. It's as simple as that. So, I was totally fine.
Still, from the casual observer,
I think him being thrown that far is much more likely to kill him than the actual blast. I think if the fridge hadn't flown away, it would have been fine.
It would have been more reasonable, but then he wouldn't have gotten to meet up with the little gopher at the end.
Yeah, that's
right. That would have been a shame.
I don't remember with that one and the first gopher, but the middle gopher really bothered me. It was one too many. It was a gopher too far.
I love those gophers.
Would you have been bothered if when he gets out of the fridge and sees a gopher, he sort of leaned over and went, "Ah, oh, hi there, my forest friend."
So yes. Kevin told me, I guess, about your system. Yes. I do not like it.
My system is the best.
Presumably, you cut it down.
Like I said, you will hate this system. I really like Kevin's numbering system.
See, there's nothing for me to agree with you.
This is the craziest yet.
I like
Kevin's system too.
The numbering system is right as far as like a paper that you turn into your teacher.
Yeah, but there's more numbers for good. There's more numbers for bad than there is for
more,
good.
Right. Well, but since it's based for me on
that
how
means
well
you have more hatred made, in your soul than you have joy.
There are more. I will say that there are more ways to make a movie bad than there are ways to make a movie good. There's more variety of crap than there is of excellence, and I just think that's true. But, so in enjoyment, I will say that I am with you. I was bouncing in my seat. When he put on the hat just in silhouette, Everyone in the audience that I was sitting in, and that was the second day. This wasn't the midnight showing people. The second day, everybody started clapping in the theater.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt. I was that happy. But as far as made as a movie... it had thematic problems. It had a lot of weird issues. I sort of like it more now after talking to Hurlburt about the way that it was made, but I still have a lot of problems with it as a film. So as a film, I would give it maybe a 7. And I would have said 6 if you'd asked me at the beginning of this conversation.
Power of one.
Yeah, I'll probably give it a 7 too. I mean, kind of almost want to give it a 6, but I'm not going to. So it is, because it is a good movie. I know.
God, it's a lot better than Doomsday.
Yeah, we all agree with that.
Yeah, it is better than Doomsday. That's true. But,
so you have to rate it above Doomsday. Huh?
Well, they're both 7s.
But that's an equivalent score.
It's not an equivalent score. Indiana Jones is a higher 7.
7.
Okay, but let's just agree that empirically you've given
it. No, I'm not going to agree to that.
You have empirically given it a precisely equivalent score.
No.
Like, I dished out a 3.5. You could go with a point system.
I'm not going to do
that. All right.
same
score. I mean, I do feel really passionate about this film, but I don't want to give the opinion that I look down on people's opinion.
No.
Or anything like that. I don't want to.
You don't.
Okay, because, my wish was, I wish everybody could see the joy that I see in this movie, but at the same time, it's kind of like, if everybody did see the joy in it, then it wouldn't be as fun.
Something special about being talked to specifically.
If everybody just agreed with me, I'd be like, oh, what's the point in enjoying something then?
Do you want me to give you a curmudgeonly sort of opinion to end this on?
As long as you fit the word boobs into it.
Okay. What I would have liked instead of the wedding scene at the end is if you just got sort of a brief glimpse of Indiana Jones sort of like violently sexing Karen Allen, like behind a dumpster, like outside a diner, and you hear her say, "Ah, my boobs hurt."
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
Now, those are our ratings, but Chris, what I want from you is a forgettable villain from a forgettable film.
Give me a name.
Fuck you. That's my name.
Dumpy Joe.
Agent Smith.
Proud looker.
Kaiser Soze.
Illinois Nazis.
Rocco.
Mad Dog.
Mother.
Karoga.
Kittredge.
Wanda.
Willa.
Wilkins!
You can call me Susan if it makes you happy.
From Congo, R.B. Travis.
That's Tim Curry's character?
No, that is Joe Don Baker.
Oh, yeah.
Who sends them out to the Congo with the facade of wanting to... deal with this ape thing, but really he just wants the diamonds to power his like super laser gun and run his satellites and get him millions of dollars and stuff
regular,
like that.
Regular Ray Winston, eh?
Have you ever seen Congo?
I have
as well. It's a bad movie.
Yeah,
I've had some fans of Congo sprouting up on our friend group recently.
Yeah, that's concerning.
It is concerning.
My Mitchell.
Thank you.
enjoyed it, everyone out there listening right now. And
a special thanks to our
thank
guest,
you, Ian, for guest starring. Time. Guest starring. As a guest.
Your brain malfunctioned there for a second.
Not quite. The that was Chris Tognati, Sean Hurlburt.
Good evening.
The man who loves Indiana Jones more than life itself, Kevin Werkheiser, cut from similar cloth, his older brother Ian, guest star, and me, Sean Sterling. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Were you ever scared that Indy wasn't going to make it?
No, I knew he was going to make it because I mostly have a lot of the episodes, and I know he was always going to make it. I just love it. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's just really actioned. And I really like it.